All right. Welcome, everybody, and good morning. This is our interoperability standards work group meeting. I'm Seth Pazinski with ONC, and I'll be serving as your designated federal officer for today on behalf of Wendy Noboa. Just want to remind everyone that all work group meetings are open to the public, and we welcome public feedback throughout the meeting. So members of the public can type in their comments in the Zoom chat feature throughout the meeting. Or we will have time at the end of the agenda for verbal comments for the public who are interested in taking advantage of that opportunity. With that, I'm going to kick off the call with a roll call for the workgroup members. So when I call your name, if you can please indicate that you are present, and I will start with our co-chairs. Sarah DeSilvi.
Present.
Steve Eichner.
Present. Good morning.
Morning. Pooja Babra.
Good morning, I'm here.
Ricky Bloomfield.
Good morning.
Good morning. Medell Briggs-Melanson.
Good morning.
And let's see, Hans Butendijk got a message he would be joining late, so we'll be looking for him when he joins. Keith Campbell.
Good morning.
Good morning. Christina Caraballo.
Good morning.
Good morning. Grace Cordovano.
Present. Good morning.
Good morning. Raj Dash.
Good morning.
Good morning. Derek DeYoung. Lee Fleischer. Right, we got a message that having Hannah Galvin will be joining Lee as well. Let's go to Raj Gudvarti. Jim Jurgis. Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Morning. Hung Liu.
Good morning.
Okay. Anna McAllister. Katrina Miller Parrish.
Good morning.
Morning. Aaron Neinstein. Kiki Loma Ashun Kintan.
Good morning.
Good morning. Rochelle Prosser. Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Morning. Alex Muggy. Phil Sutherland. Shelly Spiro.
Good morning.
Good morning. Zanet Zumair King.
Good morning.
Good morning. Naresh Sundar Rajwan.
Good morning.
Good morning. Anyone I missed or that joined late? All right, well, thank you, everyone. That completes our roll call for the meeting. And now I'm going to turn it over to Sarah and Ike for their opening remarks.
Welcome, everybody. Good morning. No other opening remarks except to say that I'm very excited to get into the work today, and I look forward to moving some elements or having further discussion to help complete our charge. Ike, anything else?
Not much. I just noticed in the chat we had a couple of people just joined, so we've got our work group coming even more together, but I'm excited for the day.
Wonderful. Yes, the opening remarks on to ISWG charge and timelines. This is our agenda. We're having the general opening remarks, and then we're going to try to do a preliminary review, I'm just gonna say, of everything on the spreadsheet to make sure everyone's aware. We are planning our SME attendances, and really, really grateful for all of you who've leaned in to identifying SMEs. So thank you for that. So if a SME is invited, we are not going to be discussing it until that SME is leading and guiding the conversation. So again, hoping to do a fairly thorough review so everyone understands what's on the spreadsheet and further our conversations today. And Ike, anything else to say on the agenda? Pretty straightforward. Next slide. I just want to ground ourselves in the charge before we go through. So this, again, we do this as a common grounding every single time we gather. The overarching charge is to review and provide recommendations on draft USCIV 5. when you break it down, the specific charge is to evaluate draft USCDI V5 elements that should be considered for final USCDI V5 release, and then to elevate and discuss and add commentary on any level two data classes. Again, I want to make sure that everyone sees all of those new level twos that are added there. And most of them are going to be requiring some level of SME guidance and conversation. But I do want to note that in general, we have perhaps a set of some complexity in our elements, but you know, a pretty tidy list of elements to address in our charge. So I think we're going to be able to, you know, to aim for our final recommendation being delivered on time. Ike, anything else to say on the charge?
On this space, we did have Anna McAllister and Lee Fleischer have joined us as well.
Welcome. Wonderful. All right, I think we're good here on the charge. If we can go to the next slide. And then from here on, I believe the next slide. I believe, so we just wanted to discuss some of the elements that are, we're hoping to move into drafting recommendations. So we did have extensive conversation on emergency department note last meeting, and we really want to thank all of the commenters who have worked. It looks like we have, you know, Ricky led the charge, and then Hans commented, and Katrina also added note. So we're trying to get to a point where we're working on drafting our final recommendations, even just preliminary, just so we can kind of, you know, move to a point of delivering that final transmittal letter. There was a draft final recommendation given for operative note as well, but I do want to note that the LOINC element is a little bit different with operative note, as I think it was Ricky who elevated last time as well. Pardon me if I got the name wrong, but it might warrant brief consideration, or at least members to go into the final recommendation and add commentary there. Just so we can make sure that we can move through. Again, you can always find the final recommendations in process in the aligned column on the Google Sheet. Anything else? It looks like Al's ready to open to share when we're there. We just want to make sure everyone knows these two elements we're hoping to move into comment, like from our open conversation into drafting the final recommendation. Ike, anything else?
Just to add in that the way that we develop final recommendations is we will synthesize the information from the discussion can be synthesized into a final recommendation. The work group works on a consensus-based process for approving the language and couple usual loops for refinement until we get to a point that everybody is comfortable with the language, then we'll actually approve it and move it into our final version text for forwarding off to high tech.
Thank you so much. I can just, your audio is a little choppy. So just to make sure, I think he was just trying to make sure that everyone understands that our initial recommendations that we're drafting are an iterative consensus process. And that's really a great place to engage so we can make sure that everyone has their perspectives in there. Next slide.
So and Sarah, that, just to confirm, when you say finalization, it's actually, it's a movement towards finalization, but we still have time. Correct. Thank you.
Yes. Exactly. That's what we're trying to say. So in order to get to move toward a final recommendation, what we try to do is put text of a possible final recommendation in that section of the spreadsheet, understanding that it's a consensus and iterative process that will not be truly final until everyone's on board. But it's helpful to have text to respond to just to keep us moving along. Does everyone understand that? And again, you can see that again, process happening, and really grateful for all prior members and new members for commenting in that column. Another thing we just want to make sure everyone's aware of is, so these, like, as I mentioned, even though these elements are on the spreadsheet, because we have identified as an ISWG that we would appreciate ME guidance, these elements are not going to be discussed until SMEs are able to attend. Again, thank you so much to our friends who on the committee who've advised that SMEs attend. There's actually a fair number of elements on here that we are going to be discussing today that have additional SME thoughts. So these are the initial ones. And again, thank you to our O1C team for reaching out and to these individuals. So we have a cluster of elements that came out of Gender Harmony, and Carol and Rob coming from Gender Harmony. Mark, thank you for connecting us there. We have advanced directive and possible clustering of orders that's to be determined. And then we are working on SMEs for care plan, which is a level two element. All right. Any other questions on this? Again, we have, so Aaron, you also had some elements that you added on for SME guidance, and we're just kind of working, thinking through that as well. I just want to note some of your level two elements. All right, next slide. And I think we're pretty close to getting to the spreadsheet now. Oh, sorry, my apologies. So this is a running list that we have to try to help us understand where we are in space and time on the data classes. This is a format we used last year where you can see things that we've discussed, and then you can see things that are finalized, meaning the discussion fairly complete, and we're moving on to fully drafting and feeling comfortable with that final rec. So things are in yellow when we've discussed them, and they move to green when we've completed them in prior ISWGs. All right, and then you can see this. So hopefully, again, we're hoping to get through some new data elements, at least have a discussion on them today to keep things rolling. Ike, anything else to say here?
No, I think we're good.
Great. And then understanding that some of these are those SME conversations, so we won't be discussing them until our SMEs are here, and that we'll come back with dates on that. Next slide. All right. And I think, next slide. So we're almost ready to go to the spreadsheet. I think, you know, we just want to get through these slides. So these are all so far the level two elements that have been elevated by members of the ISWG. You can see them at the end. We'll see them on the spreadsheet very shortly. You can see a suggestion for adding a health literacy within health status assessments, suggestions for adding specimen collection date and time. And Aaron, this is what I was mentioning prior. So in allergies and intolerances, substance, food, family health history, and then a set of health insurance information elements, coverage period, policy number, Medicare, patient identifier, payer name, plan name, plan identifier, and group name. And then we had a request for adding maternal SDOH note within clinical notes. Again, we're going to be hoping to get down to those elements shortly in our conversation. And if we need SMEs to guide us in that, we will reach out and do so. Any other thoughts on these level two elements? Again, just making sure that everyone sees these. All right, next slide. Now I think—
Actually, Sarah, can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
That last slide, there was some SME discussion possibilities that may not be needed. Is there anything we need to do now, or are we in a holding pattern?
I think we're still waiting. So in the SME column on these, we have each of these elements, and again, I think this is where Aaron had put in suggestions for SMEs. We just need to figure out what SMEs we would want, and then reach out to them.
Okay, thank you.
And again, that's all, once we go to the spreadsheet, we can see that very clearly. So anything, there is that column where we've tried to encourage people to identify SMEs, and whatever work we can do collectively to get names so we can start sending invitations, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next slide. And the next slide. I think now, Al, we are, the best place to have the discussion is actually on the spreadsheet.
All right, I'm pulling it up now.
Thank you. And thank you, Stephen, for your commentary on those level two elements.
All right, should see it now.
Fantastic. Again, we don't have an incredibly long list of data elements on our, in draft USID 5 compared to last year's. And this is a sense of getting to a point of refinement. And So we do have time, hopefully, to get through them. We, again, if we scroll over, I just want to make sure everyone sees the conversation that's happening in the work in the final recommendation in column. If we scroll over so everyone can see that, we asked someone to take lead on drafting the recommendation for emergency department note. If we can move over to that final recommendation and process, that would be great. Just so people can see. Great. This is in work group discussion. And again, my apologies, it's not the final recommendation, but it's where we're trying to draft it. And you can see Ricky took lead on drafting that. This is just, again, just orienting for members of the group. And then Hans did some commentary, and then Katrina also added some commentary. So just making sure that everyone sees that in process. We would love to make sure that conversation continues here, just so we can keep on moving along. If there's anything that needs to be rediscussed, we are here to have that conversation, but we would love to just keep on moving a little bit through the elements, just so everyone can, so we can raise risks and other elements. Grace?
Just curious, is there any value in adding, let me back up a step. Many of the discussion points are from a standards and codes, and I can appreciate all the technicalities that need to go into this. Would there be a benefit of including patient stories or experiences that anyone that's a caregiver or provider for patients, where it is, why it is so necessary to include any of these particular elements? That's something that hasn't been included in these spreadsheets. And even when you go into OnDeck, to submit elements or data classes, you do have to provide a narrative as to why it matters. And I feel like there's room for improvement in us capturing why it matters. And I'm curious if that would also be helpful in convincing ONC why some of these so strongly should be included moving forward across the finish line. Just my two cents.
It looks like I hear that you asking ONC that, and so I'm going to go to Katrina and then go to Al. Katrina?
Sorry about that. So I'm just, when I'm looking at this, I'm just trying to figure out if the recommendation is a recommendation to ONC or a recommendation for what will be stated in USCDI. So I feel like the... should be chosen as part of the subsequent data modeling discussions. I'm not sure who we're talking to there. So maybe I need to be realigned with exactly who the audience is for this recommendation or what this terminology, the document this terminology is for.
That is a really good question. It looks like maybe we can go to Al. I'm going to try to have Al do initial response to both Grace's comment and your observation, and then we can try to add thoughts as well. Al?
First of all, to address Grace's question, the justification, rationale, sort of statement, and sort of on the kind of evidence for adding a data element, I think is really important for data elements that are not already on the draft V5 list. The reason that we put it on draft V5 is because we think it should be in V5. Okay, so there's, I don't think that there's a need to highlight why at least these two data elements are important, because ONC is already convinced of that. For data elements that are not on this list, I think the justification, whether it's justification that you provided from the patient perspective or any other reason why it's important, I think it's really important to put in the narrative of the recommendation. To Katrina's question about who the audience is, the work group is developing recommendations that will go in a formal transmittal letter from the HITECH to the national coordinator. So the audience is the national coordinator for the recommendation. Now, if the recommendations are technical in nature, that's fine. We've had a lot of discussion about change the codes or change the definition, maybe change the examples. All of those are perfectly appropriate recommendations, you know, technical recommendations. But if it's something more than that, change in sort of the examples or change in the direction of the state element, that can also go in the recommendation.
Thanks.
We're comfortable. So we now hear kind of a universal, there's everything in the chat, and what Al's saying is that Grace, the patient perspective is really, really critical in justification, especially in the level two elements. We've heard in the chat that it's also, if we can, especially with those level two elements, come out with strong recommendations, that really helps from moving things along from level two to the next draft of USCDI or even the current version of USCDI. And then we heard Al clarify that the audience is the national coordinator. So we consider that as we are framing our discussion and final recommendations. Oh, thank you, Grace, that's lovely. And so Grace is advising that we add the clarifying points in the headers. That's a good thought there. All right, so again, hoping that the conversation, again, we will come back, in time to refine the emergency and the operative note elements. I do just wanna note, Ricky, you mentioned if we go to, are we okay to move to discussion on the elements now? We good to keep us moving along? I would like to just kind of briefly touch base on the differentiation you made in the last meeting. I think it was you, again, my apologies if it was not, between the specificness of the LOINC code for operative note and how it's different from emergency room note because of the existing structure of the operative note. I just want to make sure that even if we're considering addressing them in similar fashions, that what you were trying to call to light last meeting is understood and included in the discussion. Ricky, does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. The difference that I raised last time was that at least for US core guidance, there is already a LOINC code in the suggested clinical note guidance for the surgical operative note. The distinction is that it's not in the required category, it's simply recommended, but there is an actual code, and that's the 11504-8 that has already been mentioned. And so what that means is if certain health technology vendors, EHR vendors, have implemented support for this, it's likely they have chosen that code for these narrative operative notes already, since it is part of that guidance. And so the distinction here that I made was I included that code which already exists for the op note. For the other note, emergency department, I chose a LOINC code, but for both of these, I put, for example, EG rather than a requirement. And that was feedback. I know Hans, I don't think Hans has joined yet. I don't have the list. And I'm sure he'll have thoughts and feedback on this when he does join. Hans made a comment here that the LOINC code should be distinct from the LOINC code used for the full emergency department document. And I think he's referring to the LOINC concept of document. And then he used the word must be chosen. And the only feedback I had with that is that I'd be hesitant to include such strong wording like must here, because I think that might limit the ability for those who are doing the modeling afterwards, based on our recommendations, they might feel like they can't choose some specific code. And I would rather them have full flexibility because they'll bring experts to the table that we don't necessarily have here, and they'll have a lot more people come and start discussing it. And so I just want to make sure that we give good guidance, but we don't limit their ability to choose what might work best for the whole ecosystem. And that's why I use the word should rather than must. And if it helps, we could even leave out the examples. If that's too limiting, we could not include any LOINC code. I know we had a conversation about that before, and just let them, you know, have those discussions. But I want to make sure they have full ability to choose what they think is best.
If we can scroll down, Al, thank you so much, Ricky, for I'm glad I remembered it correctly. I just want individuals to see if we can see both the work group discussion regarding emergency room note and operative note at the same time, it might need to zoom in slightly or out just to make sure. The reason being is, so this is where you can see Hans, and this is just for new members, you can see Hans and Ricky going back and forth on some of this. Again, we will come back to this to finish our discussion, but we did hear caution about completely removing the loin code from enough members last time. So I just wanna note that that's something that as a work group member, you can add to the work group discussion column as we move along to just to touch on other elements and work on this iterative process of finishing our final recommendation. Does that make sense? So there's a discussion going on in the workgroup discussion column and column L. You can see there's a process of refinement, right? So if someone says something in there that you find to be concerning, and I'm just elevating the fact that there was some concern in removing the loin code altogether that many members expressed last time. So we'll work on refining this the recommendations in column L over time as we work on other elements. Does everyone feel comfortable with that? Just to keep the ball rolling? All right, I think we're doing okay. So for the sake, we're gonna try to keep on moving through. So we're gonna try to touch on, again, another discussion, another element as we go forward, kind of again, just making sure that we're familiarizing ourselves with the different elements. And again, we're not gonna be discussing anything where we have a SME coming. So the next element that we have here is lot number. And this, again, is a draft V5 element. The definition is sequence of characters representing a specific quantity of manufactured material within a batch. It's currently in the data class immunizations, and it looks like most of the conversation has to do with whether or not it should be extended to different data classes. You can see this aligns with the ONC question. We did ask, this is the question they put in the public comment. This is the question they're asking us to consider. Should lot number be scoped more broadly to apply to medications and other data elements or kept to the specific to immunizations? So there's a couple questions here. One is on support of the element as it stands, lot number under the data class immunizations. And one is supporting leaning into ONC's question about whether to expand it to medications and other data elements. And you see, Stephen saying, like, just to iterate, you see Stephen supporting his current iteration and then wondering if there's standards for medications. You see Hans replying there. And then I would just love to open it up to discussion. So you see, justification for recommendation to include medications, but wondering whether we have enough, whether we have the standards exist to support this. Stephen?
Yeah, and just reiterating that, I mean, I think it would be great to include medication lot number. It could be very helpful with medication recalls, which happen not infrequently. But it, as I looked around the standards, it wasn't clear to me that that was even a thing. That I think that when we have recalls and we have to deal with that within health systems and pharmacy systems, I think people just scramble around and pull the data out of their own database fields. But I may be wrong, and I'm really interested in hearing from the people on this call who might know about that, like Shelley and Pooja.
I know our pharmacy friends are all queued up and ready. Thank you. Oh, we're so grateful for the Venn diagram of expertise in this committee. Shelley?
Yes. I had a call with the pharmacy work, the HL7 pharmacy work group yesterday about this topic. And it there is a room for lot number in the medication dispensed resource for medications. So it's at least from an HL7 standpoint, there is room to add the lot number. So I just wanted to reiterate that. But it would be under medication dispense, which would fit nicely into the medication drug class, our medication class, data element class.
Thank you. That makes a lot of sense. Pooja?
That's what I noticed as well. And I, just to add to that, I mean, I know I was just reviewing the level 2 element. So I think administration, medication administration was a level 2, which I know we talked about last year. But that could be a possibility, right, that we bring that forward as well. So could be an option there.
Shelley?
Yes, under medication administration, one of the things that we're working on now for an implementation guide is the standardized medication profile. And it's meant to capture different types of medication lists, which would include medication administered in the hospital, medication administered in a skilled nursing facility. This is all part of the PASIO project that is overseen by CMS and administered by the MITRE as the consulting group on that. So I did add a medication list type to OnDeck, and in that we have already approved, they're still pending publication, LOINC codes for the different types of medication lists, which would include a medication administration. Thereby, you would be able to use the medication resource and identify all of the different elements of the medication, but then would be able to identify if that was part of a medication administration. And that was the suggestion that came out of last year's work group, USCDI version 4, when we had this discussion about medication administration. It's very difficult to come up with a medication that's been administered without adding all of the data elements that are in the medication resource. And so by classifying the medication list of administered medication, you'd be able to make that distinction. So for Al, I added it this time around. It's still, we're hoping to get proof of concept of the medication list types in the May Connectathon so that we can test this concept. And it will be up to ONC, Al, and USCDI if they want to move this up into USCDI. But we've done the work of actually creating the LOINC codes that would handle the different types of medications lists.
Thank you so much, Shai. So I have two questions for the committee, for the work group. One is that it seems we have consensus that lot number for the immunization data class is fairly straightforward, and we feel like we should move forward on that. And there is an exploratory align with what ONC's question was on whether or not we are ready to apply this to medications at this time. Does that seem like a fair summary? I do want to note Hans's questions regarding the draft vocab standards, but conceptually, I hear us seeing that in the spreadsheet and hearing that from our experts in pharmacy and standards. I'm gonna float that around. I'm trying to see if we can start drafting what a final recommendation might look like in the work group discussion. Hans.
Yeah, thank you, Sarah, and apologies for being late and catching on the tail end. So I'm trying not to repeat discussion, but if I hear you correctly, it would be we would recommend that for immunization, lot number is appropriate, makes sense, move forward with it. For medication administration, dispense otherwise, that it would be explored for a future, not for USCDI version 5, but we need to figure out how to do that. That makes perfect sense. The question on the LOINC code, that's a side component, but just generally the way that it's expressed in standards, I've not seen, and unless Sherry has or others have identified it, but I've not seen the use of LOINC code in lot numbers, but that don't need to repeat that if that was discussed, and I'll pick it up on the notes.
It looks like Shelly, we haven't talked about that yet. Shelly, can you answer Hans's comment?
Yeah, it's not. You can't codify a lot number. They change, so it'd have to be text-based number that's added in. You could not codify LOINC codes.
Okay, that's what I thought. So then I think the other part of the suggestion would be is that not to reference LOINC in the vocabulary. I'm not sure how you would use it.
Yeah, it would have to be it. Well, how it's used in the medication dispensed. Now, lot numbers need to go to the medication dispense, not medication administration in the cycle. It's more of an inventory type of element. And so it would have to go in as a text-based, but it is covered in the medication fire resources under medication dispensed, not medication right. administration.
But for immunization, it is there because that's how it's being reported to IASs.
And that makes sense for administration. There's sort of a difference between immunization and medications and HL7, and that's why.
Okay.
So if we can just clarify that for right now, it looks like Pooja has a move to talk about medications for administration and how lot numbers for medications would fit in that within level two. So specifically right now, talking about the immunization lot number element, can we just lean into the comment on whether the LOINC code is appropriate for this immunization lot number case, Al? Or do you want to, you're the only person with your hand up. Do you want to talk?
No, I'm sorry, I was muted. So I apologize for this and this, particularly this aspect of the conversation. I think that the inclusion of LOINC as an applicable standard is a mistake. I'm referencing the webpage, which does have it, which is actually why it ended up on this list like this. Okay. But in the PDF itself, it does not include LOINC. And we recognize that it is a text, you know, alphanumeric sort of string that is, I think, universally used to communicate lot number. So I would just disregard the LOINC code applicable standard. We can take it out of, I can take it out of the, it's a mistake. So shouldn't worry about LOINC being in there.
Fantastic. That helps a lot. Shelley?
We'll fix that on the website today and we'll fix it on the, well, we'll fix it on the.
Right now.
Boom.
Yeah, I totally agree with Al, and that's appropriate. What people might not realize, and I think I was the submitter of this request, the lot number is something that's required on the IIS form for immunizations, and that's why it's important to include it as a data element, but it would have to be text-based because the manufacturers assign that lot number depending on when it's manufactured. But and I think it would be appropriate to include it under medication administration for immunizations because it's not dispensed or put into the or not administered to the patient in that process when you're submitting your IIS form. But for medications, it's very different. It is related to what is dispensed. That's technically why there is a difference between immunizations and medication when it's in relationship to lot numbers.
I'm going to try to move forward with having someone. So we seem no, I sense consensus and feeling like this is an important element, lot number within the immunization data class. I see us and Pooja's elevating and Shelley's like echoing that we can consider medication lot numbers within Pooja's move to get medication administration up for further discussion. And I hear Al saying that the LOINC code is removed, which answers Hans's question. Is someone willing to take a lead on drafting a final recommendation in column L? Because I don't hear any concern for this element per se, and I hear us agree on its importance. And I hear us answering ONC's question and some of the questions in the member recommendation category by specifically focusing in on lot numbers for medications and the appropriate data class down in our level two discussion. Anyone want to take a lead on a drafting of a rec there?
Sure, I can take the lead and get the Shelley and a couple of other of us to take a look at it.
Thank you.
Of course.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was about to try, but you don't want me to try.
I was looking for the mute button.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you so much. So again, I feel like we have a pretty good response to the specific element and specific class and a good response to ONC's question moving forward to considering medications within medication administration. And again, we'll come back to this. This is an iterative process. Next, moving down to the next element, which I'm just trying to get to the formal name, which is that test kit unique device identifier. This is an old friend of last year. So the data class, really grateful that this made it into draft UCIV 5. So the data class is laboratory. The data element is test kit unique device identifier. The definition is numeric or alphanumeric code representing a collection of materials necessary to perform diagnostic tests. It lists an applicable vocab standard, and it is, of course, a draft B5 element. And you see, again, you see the ONC question, again, we asked them to put these questions in the spreadsheet so that we can see what their thoughts are regarding this, is in what scenario this element would this data element be useful? What experiences do health IT developers have exchanging this element? And, you know, this is we had a robust discussion regarding this last year, and I anticipate similar discussion today. Again, many of the other elements on the draft V5 have SME guidance, so I think it's okay to settle on here a little bit to have an initial conversation. I imagine that you would be raising your hand, looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
Okay. I think that, we all are familiar with this, but I think that the iteration this year seems to be less nuanced than what we put forward last year, which is that we understand that the full UDI, including the production identifier, it is a couple, gives people pause because, you know, that those are instance data, which similar to lot number can change over time. And so those are like serial number and lot number and expiration date. But what we're going for here, while we eventually want to achieve the UDI, which is the device identifier and production identifier, what we're looking for here is inclusion of it in the USCDI. So there is a device identifier information that allows people to know at least what kit line it was performed on. And I think that that was something that we kind of all coalesced around last year. And so I don't want to speak for Mahans, but yeah.
That makes sense. And do you feel like the element, and I guess this is a conversation for the whole work group. Do you feel like the element as itself and as defined is sufficient to meet that purpose, Hans?
Yes, thank you. I think this has indeed been a challenging discussion because of if you need, and I completely agree with Hong, if you talk about the full FDA-defined UDI, it's going to be hard to get that from a lab system. And even a simple text model equivalent of a DI, device identifier, is going to be hard. So, so that's one part. It's not that there's not an interest and a need for it, but it's just hard based on the flow and only focusing on HIT that's going to be likely going to be certified, that would not include the lab systems typically. And increasingly, since they would have to support a lot more than they currently would do by having to support USCDI. So I think that's a challenge that we need to figure out. How can we get past that? Second question would be that there is a clear useful use for having a model, the model or an identification of the test kit of sorts. And we need to understand, is it including reagents or is it just the quote-unquote hardware device? What is it, one, the other, or both, or multiple? Because sometimes it's the combination that tells you how you can use it. And how you can use it, as Hein others have explained before, is around comparability. And to whom is that most important? The immediate user, generally, the first receiver, the ordering provider, if you will, in that system? Is it secondary data use so that FDA or others can use it and have that access? Is it more for research institutes, medical research otherwise? Is it for the individual practice that receives that data and would they use it? So I think we have a couple of questions still on what is the best path to step us into this that is reasonable, that any HIT would reasonably have a good reason to need to support that, because UCDI is growing and it is meant for HIT, not just EHRs. Are we creating a larger set in UCDI, or should it be dealt with in another way to get the user base that needs it, have it available there and progress into it, but not systems that support other users for which that immediate use is not as relevant. I'm trying to get a better picture of that. I don't think we are totally clear on that yet, on how much as a result can we do now, or is there still some effort that needs to be done on the lab side to start to be able to actually get the data in as well, so it's easier for subsequent systems to take advantage of it.
It looks like we have, so Raj and then Hong and then Keith, I might ask you to come and bring your voice into the conversation as well. So Raj?
Thank you. I can understand concern about this, but I would say that we need to start somewhere. I would say a test kit UDI is a very specific way of identifying the test that's being performed in a laboratory. It's true that there's a level one data element, the instrument ID, that taken together provides that maybe that more globally unique. And then if you want to actually get into lot numbers, that would be the production identifier. So, but the level of challenge for a laboratory, I think as probably was discussed last year, continues to increase the more stringent you get. I think this is a very great place to start for a laboratory. I think every laboratory would know exactly what to put here for any FDA approved test. And maybe Hans, to answer your slight concern that I was hearing in between the lines was, for non-FDA approved tests or tests that are awaiting FDA approval, an alternative vocabulary standard such as LOINC could be used. And I actually put a little link to a LOINC data element that might suffice in the comments. It's kind of comments, member recommendations here are so long, but it's towards the bottom. I'm very supportive of getting this into B5. I think it's going to take us most of the way there for comparability and interoperability of lab results. Thank you.
Thank you, Raj. Hong?
So I think that the applicability of this is across the board, because there's really no other healthcare element in terms of that touches everything, right? Laboratory results touches everything, and the accurate interpretation of it is required in terms of it, of a comparability. But more than that, there are other use cases that we are coming forward that require the use of this. If we want to be able to import patient data that they've collected from their home instrument or from their monitoring devices, we need to have the information about what device that came from. And part of this is so that we can differentiate the ones that were performed in the hospital based on the mainline chemistry analyzers versus what the patient is bringing in-house. And a further use case is, we can collect that data and determine trends. As a diabetic, I would want to know that my home device has a bias and consistently gives me a false sense of security when compared to the laboratory obtained results. That's the kind of calculation analysis that is more meaningful and compelling when it's performed on population-based things. But we can't do that if every single time a patient brings in their device, we're not able to record who the manufacturer is. We can't compare things when we don't know what we're comparing.
Thank you so much. It makes me think of the amazing advocacy that Anna has done from a patient collected data perspective. So thank you, Shelley.
I hope I'm understanding this right. And Hung, I totally agree with you. There are pharmacies across the United States, especially in the community setting, that has all of these test kits. Look at just what happened with COVID and the amount of test kits that had to be utilized. This is really an important area for us to track and trace and to make sure that these are being used appropriately and recorded appropriately. And just wanted to make sure that the use case of a pharmacy providing a test kit, whether that's for a UTI, I mean, we have lots of mail and other types of locations that give UTI test kits out and sells them. This is a little bit beyond just a laboratory issue. And unless I'm totally off on this, and Hung, please tell me if I am, I think this is very broad and I am in total support of this data element.
Thank you so much, Shelley. Ike?
Thank you, Shelley.
Thank you. A couple of points. One, I think it's important that it be included in US CDI, not just US CDI plus. But a related component is looking at potentially beyond just the model number of the group, but really looking at the full FDA identifier, because that becomes relevant where you're looking at what test methodology may be used on a particular sample in the laboratory environment. It's not just, oh, it was done on this model equipment, but what was the actual test protocol used, because that could affect how results are impacted. A third piece is looking at the use of UDI in research. I personally have been on the in the patient mode of research, where research was really dependent upon the particular device used to scan or for CT scans and like, and looking at that as a consistent identifier that everybody in this particular test cohort used the exact same equipment for scanning. And that was really important as they were looking at data analysis across the patient population. So I think those are three really good examples why we need to include it here.
Thank you. And then Anna, hi, I called you. What are your, Anna, your thoughts?
Hey there, sorry. I was attempting to go on my earbuds because they're jackhammering outside my window and like it messed up my sound. So my apologies. I just wanted to say, like, the specifics of how we do this around UDI, et cetera, I will defer to those who are more expert in the different coding systems. But from a patient perspective, just sort of bringing it home, the fact that we don't have laboratory results in data that could be shared, or that it's like so far down the roadmap, is a little mind-boggling, because if we're not sharing, or we don't have in the immediate horizon the notion that laboratory values can be shared, what exactly are we sharing? I mean, yes, there are absolutely critical things that need to be shared as it relates to medication and diagnoses and all of the other things, like imaging. Laboratory values are so basic. I mean, that's the stuff that I, again, as a patient who has 13 different specialists, has a lot of different medications, like that's the stuff that really needs to be communicated. So we have to find a way to get beyond some of the concerns about the, some of the concerns about specific codings and just figure out what's going to make it happen. Because without this, it just seems like this entire enterprise is a useless endeavor, and patients just kind of feel like nobody's listening and nobody's trying to make their lives easier, because we still have to bring this data manually to each of our doctor's appointments.
Anna, thank you for raising that incredible point, and thank you for your patience and persistence in elevating that.
Jackhammering.
We can't hear it, so you're good.
Oh, okay.
Hannah?
Hey there. So, you know, I think that a lot of the points that have been made, I really agree with, and to Hans's point in the actual text, right? A lot of laboratories, and especially the commercial laboratories, are not sharing this data and not sharing it electronically right now with certified EHR technology. But I wonder if some of our goal here in including this with USCDI version 5 is to be forward thinking, right? And to say, right, nothing is being mandated right now, but is to say, hey, this is the way the industry needs to go. And you commercial laboratories, you commercial vendors that are releasing these test kits, the expectation going forward is that you share this data in a structured way, or that is the goal, and that by including it, we sort of set that standard and expectation as a sort of future sort of state and a future thinking state, even if that is not sort of the industry standard to be able to be to share it today, right? It's not required, but it's the forward thinking kind of goal to be able to do that. Because ultimately, I mean, the points that have been made are absolutely the case, right? You can go to any pharmacy today and buy all sorts of test kits over the counter. You can order them online. You can go, you know, and nobody is sharing this data or tracking this data. I think that that there could be something to be said for us sort of saying this is the way that we should be doing this in the future, even if it is not current practice today.
Thank you, Hannah. I think you really are drawing together some of the focus that Hung was talking about in the beginning as the evolution from our last ISWG iteration last year, even though you weren't here. So thank you so much for those comments. And then Keith, thanks for coming. I pulled you from the chat. So Keith.
Good morning. I really want to just build on a lot of the comments from Anna. And one of the things that I think people might be mistakenly believing is that the UDI is only helpful in a very narrow circumstance, in particular with regards to, regulatory decision-making. And that's just not the case. And as I look into it more and more, I learn more and more about how this can affect things across the board. We recently did a study, we refer to it as the 5-lab study, where when you go to a CLIA high complexity lab, we found that the laboratorians only assign the same LOINC code to the same test about 58% of the time. Okay, that's not 99.5%, that's 58% of the time. I think that number is abhorrent, okay? And having the unique device identifier provides an anchor that can bring you back and say, well, what was actually performed? There's another study that was in the Journal of Nephrology that looked at a serum albumin test. So if you want to talk about how this can affect an individual patient, right? For the serum albumin tests, and these are important for somebody who may need anticoagulation because they're having an acute kidney condition, that using that a particular test using a particular method, and I had to double check the number, it's 59%. And it's kind of ironic that our other test study showed 58%, only 58% agreement, but this is 59% of the time when using a particular serum albumin with a particular methodology, they would reach the wrong decision about anticoagulating a patient. Right now, anticoagulation is a big deal. I mean, if you don't have it when you need it, or if you get it when you shouldn't have it, there's consequences of stroke, other things in that case. If we go to clinical oncology, you know, getting the right results for the patient is key in determining the right therapy for that patient. And this is really a foundation that is needed, not just, again, for public health, not just for regulatory decision making, but it's really more and more important for the care of the patient. And, you know, this ongoing thing about, well, can we really trust the results of laboratory data that are exchanged? Well, not really. If we need to solve that, this is a foundation upon which we can do that. So forgive my passion. I'm happy to follow up in any way that can be helpful, but I really just want to amplify what Anna was saying, because I've heard those stories from other people.
Thank you so much. And we really hope that some of that justification can make it into the final transmittal letter, So as we think about moving forward into, and using the workgroup discussion column to draft our final rec, we really want to make sure that Anna's comments and your comments are part of that. So might tap you again, Stephen, and then I hope to actually get to a point where we can think about moving forward, because I hear consensus, I just hear some concepts of refinement. Stephen?
Yeah, just again, on the refinement side, to Anna's point, obviously the exchange of lab data is critical and it happens every single day, millions of times, and it is, as Ricky said in the chat, that data is going to patients, that data is going amongst providers, that for the most part, it should not be necessary for people to hand carry their lab data from one doctor to another. But here, and again, to Ricky's point in the chat, to determine the reliability and really the comparability of the results that you receive, that's where this level of detail is so critical. If we are actually going to get to true semantic interoperability of test results, we need to have this depth of knowledge about what test was done and just how it was done. And that's what this is getting us. This is not adding lab data to USCDI. We already did that. That was in version one. It was in the predecessor to version one. This is really getting us to the point that we can truly compare those results from different sources.
Thank you so much. This has been a wonderful conversation. One of the things I love about this conversation is it really has pulled from all the different types of expertise we have within the work group. Patient perspectives, FDA perspective, pharmacy, like laboratory perspectives, clinician perspectives, standards perspectives. It shows the breadth of the expertise we have. So appreciative. And I want to see if we can get to a point where I hear, again, consensus with possible refinement. If we can, as we have above, have someone volunteer to start drafting a recommendation from the work group in column L. Hung? I can't. I hear three. Are the three of you raising your hands as being willing? Is that what I see?
Yeah, willing to work together to get to draft the recommendation.
Yeah. That sounds lovely.
And particularly to the question, and I don't want to jump ahead of Hung, because it looks like you were muted. Hung, go ahead.
No, I was just going to volunteer, but I was also going to hopefully invite you to work with me on the refining the final recommendation, Hans.
Oh, absolutely, happy to. And a question there is that, how can we, from a high tech with USCDI in the back of our mind, identify the introduction into the chain where it can be introduced? Because typically with USCDI, most of the certified software where it applies our EHRs, even though it's applicable to others, and LISs. How do we get that into the chain? What are the steps that we need to take there to make that successful? Otherwise, it sits in USCDI, there is the catcher, and there's no pitch.
Thank you. And then I just want to note that for the people who just mentioned they're going to work together, Rochelle and Keith have all kind of volunteered to come in there and help as well with that, with the workgroup discussion and the draft recommendation. Rochelle?
Hi, I'm in transit today, so I hope my signal doesn't go out. I just wanted to just clarify, I'm in full support and agreement of this mission and this particular item. I think it's a big kudos. I wish we could go faster for patient sharing where oncology is concerned. That particular point of data sharing, diagnosis, lab diagnosis, pathology are means the difference between life and death and access points to treatment. So I know that I was talking from women's health and women's perspective. I think that with some guardrails, we can certainly be protective depending on the state that we live in. I know that this is a federal mandate, but people live in states. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This reminds me of the presentation we had on, well, there's lots of experts on data segmentation in the ISWG, but thank you. Your comments are very much appreciated, Michelle. Thank you. So I hear we have a group working on a draft final rec in column L. Thank you so much for this conversation. And we look forward to seeing what's evolving there. I believe we're now ready to try to move on to the next data element, which is route. We go over again. Thank you all for, you know, just trying to touch on all these elements and make sure that we examine them. So the next element is route. It's under the, if we can scroll over slightly just to see the first columns. So we have the data classes, medications, the data element is route. The definition is the physiological administration path of a therapeutic agent into or onto a patient. Examples include, but are not limited to, oral, topical, and intravenous. We have the applicable vocab standard of SNOMED CT. This is, of course, a draft V5 element. And we have some initial conversations. So we have some members saying they support the inclusion, and then we have some conversation on possible refinement. Conversation on data element, route, data class, medications. Hans?
Yeah, I think it's a logical progression to start to address route. It's already captured in prescriptions, et cetera. It's captured where administrations are documented in the administration. In light of some of the discussion, I'd be inclined to focus on the prescription, the request part for this, and make that more clear. In some other parts of USCDI, there and if it's listed on the medication as routes in that data class, it's actually unclear which aspect of medication are we talking about, the request, the dispense, the administration, et cetera, give instructions, whatever it might be. And that makes it hard to interpret downstream. So I would suggest to consider not only that it's on a request, but that it's clearly stated that that's the focus, not just medication in general, because that makes it very unclear as to what we mean. Medication administration per se, as we just talked about in other areas, that's actually currently not covered. It's mentioned by an example in another data class, actually, in procedure, and that just adds to the ambiguity. I would suggest we are crisp and clear and focus on medication request at the prescription aspect of it.
And perfectly cued in one of our brilliant pharmacy experts, Shelley.
Yes, I had this conversation yesterday with the HL7 pharmacy work group, and how they interpret the use of route is in the actual medication resource itself. So not in med it is okay in med administration because it's a data element that's used in there, but it's the basis of the actual medication resource itself, Hans. So it is classified as SNOMED as the recommended coding mechanism, and it doesn't necessarily have to be linked into medication requests, because medication requests, if it is used there, it's still based off of the medication resource itself or the components of the medication resource, if that makes any sense, Hans.
Hans, did Shelley's comment help refine your thoughts there?
I back to the difference with that, and we can pick that up, but I'm just looking at the medication resource. It's not there. It is in medication request when you drill down into dosage.
Right. They said it's in the it's in the actual medication resource itself.
Let's discuss that separately then, because
I would bring that to the pharmacy work group.
talk to them.
Experts, John Hatem, Jean Dateau, and Frank McKinney.
I just put the link in column L if anybody wants to go look at the resources in FIRE.
Yeah, I put it in the chat if you want to go there. If somebody wants to investigate any, if you go to medication request, I'll drop that one in and you'll see the difference there, but you need to drill down. I'll give the path.
So where are we at with this conversation on this element? It sounds like, again, general support for inclusion of it, but maybe some conversation on scoping. Al?
Sorry, I'm muted again. I just wanted to caution the group, maybe not caution is the right word, that we, I don't think that the work group needs to get into the modeling of FIRE, of whatever FIRE resource might be necessary to communicate this, because in many cases, the FIRE resource may not exist yet, but could be modeled, you know, at the appropriate time, should this be part of a final version of USCDI. So digging into current FIRE resources, I don't know, is within scope of this work group.
Thank you, Al. Hans?
I appreciate Al's comments. I would raise, though, the awareness that if USCDI requires new resources in FIRE, that would make it very hard in a 3-month period of time, give or take, to turn it from USCDI into a implementable implementation guide FIRE US Core or CCDA related to that. So I do believe that as part of our considerations, we need to consider maturity, where is it already available, which is actually the purpose of what Ricky and I put together in the data element mappings to FIRE and CCDA, to get a sense of if something is being proposed that doesn't exist in some manner in the standards that are going to be used to measure certification, that will be a challenge. In this particular case, actually, we are not debating that there's nothing in FIRE. It's actually that we are in slight disagreement on where it is, which we can sort out. But if we don't consider readiness of standards to support it, then it's going to be very hard to get things done in a timely fashion and have actual experience with it that we know that it can work, which is one of the criteria that was set for USCDI, that it's implementable in a reasonable time window, et cetera. That means the standards have to be there.
So Hans is making both a general response to Al's statement and then a specific response, because in this instance, it exists, but just perhaps in a more specific location, which I'm sure Shelley's going to help shed light on. Shelley?
I'll do my best, but Root is a major component of not only the medication product itself, because you could determine by the product whether it's for IV use or for oral use. It's in the medication instructions to the patient. It's in the medication requested. It's a component of the prescription that's being requested. It's in medication administration. It's all over the place. So there are plenty of places where it is codified. I think for this group, and Al, to answer your question, is it an important data element? Yes, it's in multiple places within many of the FIRE resources. And it is a major component of using this data for sharing information, for capturing information. There's a whole slew of use for it. I think what's important for us to recognize is that the route should be codified within SNOMED. It is the best way to codify it within terminology, but it's also used in text-based areas and proprietary coding in the directions, or what we call the SIG of a prescription.
Thank you, Shelley. Al, do you have something? You put your hand up and then took it down.
I just, Shelley hit on a There's no question that route is important. It actually was submitted, I think, 2 years ago as a combination of dose and route. And as most recall, we added dose in, I think, version 3 or maybe version 4. I forget the exact history, but we actually split that out thinking that they were different enough to be separate, but for whatever reason did not get added as a separate data element. We, by adding it to draft V5, we're, you know, trying to fix that. There's no question that ONC thinks that it's important, important and separate from DOSE, and that's why it's in draft V5.
And I hear generally the ISWD agreeing, right? So I feel like we, just like some of the elements above, we could start moving toward drafting a final recommendation. I do want to elevate Pooja's question in the chat, though, given what Shelley was saying regarding the different routes of documentation. Pooja, I hear you. Do you want to come? You want to voice your comment on the chat and see if it needs workgroup discussion?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, we were talking about the fire resources and all that. I mean, I guess the point is, you know, if it's, we should just be referencing SNOMED then in the recommendation, I think, as opposed to, you know, the fire resources, is my thought. So, but I agree with, you know, what Al said. I think we talked about this in the last year.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to move it forward.
So I'm going to, so Hans, and then I'm going to ask that we get a volunteer to help draft a recommendation. Hans?
Yeah, I don't think we need to reference per se the specific resource in fire in the recommendation here, but indicating that we are not just talking medication in general, which can be instantiated in 3-4 different places, that our focus is on the prescription side or on the administration side conceptually, that would help understand what is it that we have to do. If we don't state that the implication is very quickly going to be, I need to do it in all, do we really, are we ready, et cetera. So I think it USCDI being more crisp and specific about what phase of the medication process are we talking about, where we start to introduce this, that will be helpful to recognize that, because recognizing the kind of conversations and discussions that are going to happen and the differences in expectations that you're going to run into, if it's not clear in USCDI, one choice is being made in the subsequent standards, that difference is going to yield for implementers confusion and questions as to, now, what exactly are we supposed to support? And that's what we have seen in a number of examples. One of the general comments later on, not on this, this is a example of it. We'll come back to that, is that not having that level of crispness in UCDI is a problem.
Thank you. And I think I see that those kinds of expert thoughts are part of why the ISWG exists, right? We have an element that we generally agree needs, you know, has, you know, full support for moving forward. But the considerations from the different points of expertise are really important to put in that final comment in the transmittal letter. I am going to ask if someone would take lead on drafting a draft final rec in column L. And we can work from it.
Sarah, I can take that one on too. with the pharmacy people, yeah.
Thank you so much. Very grateful. All right. And again, really want to make sure that the perspectives that all of you all and your expertise have put into the chat and in the conversation are included in that. So Pooja is going to take lead on drafting, and then all experts from all of our perspectives in the ISWG can ensure that it the breadth of expertise we have is represented in that final recommendation on the final transmittal letter. All right, and so I believe the next element is, the next few elements are all part of our SME conversations. We have a pending SME presentation for advanced directive. We have a pending SME presentation for sex parameter for clinical use. So I know we only have about 5 minutes left until we move to public comment. comment, but if we can briefly move to, I think the next element, oh, and orders was also one of those, I believe, that had a SME recommendation. And then name to use as well. Am I correct that orders was one of those that had a SME?
Yes. Yeah. Advanced directives, orders, name to use.
A whole swap.
Pronouns and parameter for clinical use. Those, all five of those were.
Yeah. We only have 5 minutes.
Have scheduled.
Yeah. So we only have 5 minutes, but we land on interpreter needed, which we might be able to have an initial conversation on. Again, we have to move to public comment in 5 minutes. It seems worthy to just try to see what we can get with this in the next 5 minutes. So the data class is patient demographics and information. The data element is interpreter needed. The draft V5 definition is indication of whether a person needs language interpretation services. There are a couple applicable standards. It is a draft V5 element. You have general member support. There's lots of plus ones and additions here. And then I put a justification in column K. We have a little bit of conversation. Any thoughts on interpreter needed? Stephen?
It looked like there was a recommendation to have CMS and or CDC come to speak to this as a SME. I'm not quite sure who put that in there, but we might want to revisit that.
That was me. I put that in there, but then there was a thought that maybe it was so straightforward and required that given the breadth of other SME conversations we have on the docket, that if we wanted to test whether the work group thought SMEs were needed in this instance, or whether we could move forward with the recommendation without a SME presentation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't need a SME to understand.
Exactly. There was a could have SMEs, but maybe not necessary. Mark?
This probably doesn't need saying for this group, but just to flag that interpreter does not mean the person's patient's children, for example, which is often what happens. So I appreciate the use of the word interpreter. And it's an important distinction. Thank you.
Zeynep.
And just playing off of that comment, we've recently at our hospital just gotten a joint commission certified in health equity and had a CMS survey and a bunch of different things that all sort of made us look at this. And not only does it not mean your children, but it apparently doesn't even mean a provider who speaks your language. It has to be someone who's certified.
Yes.
So it does have implications operationally.
We definitely would want to make sure that we represent that, you know, what we know to be the evidence and what we know to be the regulatory drivers in our final recommendation. So I hear consensus on this one. This is why we didn't even necessarily feel that we need the CMS CDC to come forward and present. Ricky? Do you have any thoughts, Ricky?
Yeah, sorry, just trying to unmute. I guess one question here, I think that the commentary has been great. Is there any value in asking who made the determination and modeling that information as well? Is it self-determination? Was it a provider that determined it, that an interpreter was needed? Is that something that we should consider as part of our charge?
That's a good question. Hans?
Question that I have in that regard is, are we talking about just a need Boolean, or since Loinc and SNOMED are being referenced, we are talking something more? I don't think we're talking about the actual language that is needed. So I think we want to be a little bit more clear what's happening. So far, some of the stands are particularly using it, just a simple yes, no, that will be SNOMED. But just trying to understand it, because there's a couple of different things in play here that not clear what's meant with it.
This is where we can have maybe we have Al try to help, but we do see how it's operationalized. And I wrote this in my, in multiple CMS assessments and instruments, which is very much yes, no, as it stands right now.
Right.
Mark?
Yeah, to Ricky's question, just pointing out the overlap with the discussion we've had on the author data element. So the author, that the way we've talked about author, it would capture the source of a value. So interpreter needed, mm-hmm. you would capture who made that assessment and reported that value. So it's important interlocking data elements. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mark. And it is time for public comment. I'm really glad we teased ourselves, got a little bit into this. Ike, any other final thoughts before we move to public comment? Mike?
Sorry, I was on mute. I think we did a great job. Today we made a lot of progress. One thing to add in on interpreters, thinking about sign language interpretation mm-hmm. as well, because that's another aspect of interpretation that may be necessary, though not necessarily looking at oral interpretation. Correct. It's another aspect in play.
Correct. So we're going to pick up at interpreter needed when we come back next week. Thank you for a really robust conversation. Seth, to you for public comment.
All right, thank you, Sarah. All right, so we're gonna move into the public comment part of our agenda. If you are on the Zoom and you'd like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you are participating today by phone only, you can press *9 to raise your hand. Once called upon, you can press *6 to mute and unmute your line. And we will give folks a minute here to queue up if there are any questions or comments. Okay, not seeing any raised hands and no comments coming in on the phone at this time. So I will turn it back to Sarah and Ike to close us out.
Ike, any closing thoughts at first?
No, I think we made a lot of progress today. Looking forward to the next few meetings with some SMEs and to continue our work. I'm very appreciative of all the input from the work group members. It is really important for everyone to participate. It's a great participation today, and we'd love to see it the next few weeks as we close out our work.
I know, it was a wonderful meeting today. I really do appreciate the breadth of expertise on the work group. It's always an honor to hear from all of you all in your different areas of focus. We just wanted to put this slide up, and Ike, thank you for grounding us in this in our prep. We are, you can see that we're trying to move us to kind of getting draft recommendations so that we can start refining those. We do have, a fairly, tight timeline. So by the end of March, we really want to try to start getting that final recommendation set so that we can get a transmittal letter on time over to HITACH. So just wanted to put this slide up there for everyone's reference. We have, about 5 more open sessions, and we have subject matter expert conversations. We're plugging into those that will, assume part of the agenda for each of those different meetings. Thank you so much for all of your presence today. And we look forward to seeing you next week.